Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. I'm your host, Monica Hadley. I'm flying solo today. Caroline will be back with us next week. We have a return guest today, and this is someone who I'm really glad that we get to talk to for a second time. It's been a few years. Probably most of you, if you've heard it, it's been long enough ago you don't remember, but Sabah Tahir grew up in California's Mojave Desert at her family's 18-room motel. There she spent her time devouring fantasy novels, raiding her brother's comic book stash, and playing guitar. She says badly, but, you know, that's...
it was badly.
That might be false humility. She began writing...
I know how to play one song.
Okay, okay. She began writing An Ember in the Ashes while working nights as a newspaper editor. And that is the book that we talked with her about before. She likes thunderous indie rock, garish socks, and all things nerd. And her new book is titled All My Rage. Welcome back to Writers' Voices, Sabah.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So this book is quite different than your previous. How many books in the Ember series?
There are four books in the Ember series.
Okay. So this is your fifth published book then?
So this is my fifth published novel. No. I do have two graphic novels, so it's actually my seventh published book.
Ah, very good. Very good. So tell us a little bit about this book and how it differs from everything you've done before.
So All My Rage is a contemporary novel as opposed to a fantasy. It is following the story of three characters. The main two are Noor and Salahuddin. They are two young kids growing up in the Mojave Desert. And the third storyline is Misbah, who is Salahuddin's mother. And we follow her starting in Pakistan and then journey with her across the sea to America. The story is about these two kids, growing up in this place that seems to want to destroy them, and how they survive all these difficult things one of those should be too much for a child, but they have to deal with multiple, everything from, Noor, who wants to go to college but has an uncle who won't let her, and that's her guardian, to Sal, who is trying to run his parents' business after his mother gets ill and ends up finding that it's much more difficult than he anticipated.
Yeah. This setting, of course, has some echoes of your own childhood, but I'm hoping that you didn't have to go through all of these things as a kid. Did you face some of these same difficulties?
I like to focus more on, when I think about what I drew on, here, there's a lot of me in these books, probably more than I'll ever be able to fully untangle. But I think personal experience really becomes relevant to writing when it's an experience that others can relate to, particularly in how it makes the reader feel. So a lot of All My Rage, and a lot of what I relate to is this universal experience of being in these inescapable situations where you have no good choices, situations where you're overwhelmed by all the things you can't fix or change or magically make disappear. These are two young people in this book who have so much potential and who are trying to make the best of really difficult circumstances and surrounded by a world that doesn't give them the benefit of the doubt and assumes the absolute worst. And that is absolutely something that I drew on from my own childhood,
Wow.
And the question is, that I'm trying to answer is how do you survive that? How do you have hope in a situation like that?
Now both of these families were from Pakistan, is that correct?
In Pakistan, yes.
Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And how do they end up in the middle of the Mojave Desert? It seems like such a strange place for immigrants to come.
Oh, there are tons of immigrants in the Mojave Desert. People come from all over the United States. A lot of the rural places are not, are not places that are devoid of diversity, and the Mojave Desert's really no different. People come for business. There's huge military bases in this book. There's a big military base in this desert, and that is what brings people from all over the world, because in general, the military employs contractors from all over the place.
Right. So both of the families, I guess that's what I was getting at, were drawn here because of that military installation. Yeah.
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, that's talked about in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So was it hard for you to, like, relive your past to write this?
Well, it is a book of fiction. It is not an autobiography. I wrote this book over the course of many years. I was working through, many things as I wrote it. It was difficult for me to put the characters through a lot of these things because in turn, they made decisions that I wanted to be like, don't make that decision.
There's no
story if you don't have these children making mistakes, because that's what young people do. That's what I did as a young person. I made mistakes, and I learned from them, and survived those mistakes. And so that's what I wanted to focus on in this book, is these young people who make these mistakes. And I think that really was the hardest part, is having them realistically choose things that I, as an adult, know they should not choose.
it's an interesting thing, because it's an area that I have some interest in terms of the justice system and the treating young people differently in the justice system, which tends to get overridden a lot of times. Young people get tried as adults, even though their brains really aren't mature. They don't have the same level of judgment, and sometimes don't realize the consequences of their actions. And yet we try, we want to treat them as if they did.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And that's something that I wanted to write about, is how, for this story, and I don't want to spoil anything for readers, for this story in particular,
it's a little hard
right. That is something that our readers come up against.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And particularly, particularly with Noor, where she really, I don't think it's giving anything away to say she's innocent. We all know, through the story, she's not doing anything really wrong, and yet, yet she's like faced with a situation where people won't believe that.
Right.
That's a
lot of what she struggles with throughout the book, is that, from the very beginning, people, and she says this later in the book, she says, people see what they want to see.
Yeah.
And they don't see me, and that's the reality for a lot of young marginalized children.
So how did you, for the parts with Sal's mother, who, where you start back in Pakistan, how did you research, have you ever lived in Pakistan yourself?
I briefly lived in Pakistan when I was a baby, but I have had the fortune to go back to Pakistan many times in between, particularly when I was a young person, and I was...
Yeah.
That's how I got the details. Yeah. I also spoke to many people who actually, I spoke to people who live in Pakistan.
Mm.
And I also watched a lot of travel blogs, I should say, to get a clearer sense. And I did a lot of research into the country just to remind myself of things that I might have forgotten. I spoke to multiple people who grew up in the country, who lived there their whole lives. I specifically looked into things like, what music was popular at the time that the character of Miss Bo was growing up, and, what she would have been sort of listening to versus what her parents would have been listening to. So all of those things were part of the research in an attempt to get the very limited sections were in Pakistan, but in an attempt to get those right, I did do a lot of research.
Now, one of the characters who comes to the U.S. as an adult totally seems to reject everything Pakistani. Is that a common thing, do you think?
I think it's difficult to generalize an entire group of people. I have seen it before. I will leave it there. You know, I have seen that before. I can't say whether it's common or not because I don't know every Pakistani in the United States.
Well,
you know?
That's true. You mean, and there's probably people, what, you don't?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. It was surprising to me. I never had thought about that possibility, but it makes perfect sense that not everybody would want to bring the culture with them.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit more about the differences between writing All My Rage and writing your fantasy novels. Do you have to really get yourself in a different headspace for this?
It was a really strange switch. You know, I had to remind myself, you know, hey, you know, you can't fix this problem with magic. You know, you can't have tension come from battle scenes or supernatural creatures, you know, but at the same time, ultimately, I think all my books are about hope, in really dark times. And, you know, because that sustained me through so much of my own life. So, seeing it in books meant a lot to me as a young person. So I wanted to also reflect that in all of my work. So in that regard, this story is still a book about hope. And that was a nice touchstone. You know, when I was panicking that I didn't know what I was doing, which was quite often, I would just tell myself, hey, you know, this is just a story like all the other stories. And you have to tell it honestly and you have to, you know, you have to bring hope into it. So in that regard, I was able to keep coming back to that concept.
Did you start with all three characters, like from the very beginning? Did you know this book is going to be on all three, or did you start with one and then like, oh, but Nora wants to add her voice too?
It's really hard to explain because it took 15 years to write this book. So originally it started with completely different voices, and then it changed over time to, you know, something else. And, you know, actually the voice who I started with was Mispah's voice, because I felt that storyline very strongly. And then I started thinking about, you know, who is in her life. And I had already had these characters, these two kids who grew up at the motel. So, you know, the fact that one would be her child, that was automatic. But then the other one was something that I was still thinking through. Mm. And so then I added Noor a little bit later. No, I shouldn't say added her. I changed her. You know, I changed that character to Noor and sort of adjusted that storyline to fit.
Now, if the book had been focused on Mispah, that would be a very different book. Because now it's a young adult novel now, although certainly any age would enjoy reading it. But if it had been focused on Mispah, maybe not quite so much of a young adult
novel. I
might
have focused on Mispah's childhood, you know, or Mispah's youth. I mean, we do start with her when she's 17 or 18, sorry. So, you know, she is the same age. We start with her at the exact same age as we start with her son and his best friend.
Right.
So her story does start, but, you know, we go a little bit more into the future with her instead of sort of, remaining in her formative years. But I do think that, you know, there is likely a story there for just Mispah, you know, absolutely. Yeah. She's a very interesting character. No. This was a one and done.
Really? Why is that? Why would you not like continue in writing more like this?
I have other things I want to write. You know, I have other worlds that I'd like to return to or visit. You know, things that I had been working on, you know, before that you know, new ideas that I want to kind of get back to. You know, I think that the story is complete. I don't think that it needs a prequel. I don't think it needs a sequel. Maybe that'll change, but I really feel pretty strongly that this was, the story is what it's meant to be, you know, which is just the one book.
I think so, too. I think it is very complete. But do you think you will write contemporary fiction again, or do you think you'll stick to fantasy from now on?
I don't know. That's a really good question. I'm not sure. I know that my next book is not contemporary fiction. I'm going back to fantasy. I'm very excited to do so. But will I ever write it again? I would never rule that out. I really try to go where my creativity takes me. I don't like to stay in a box. I don't like to just be a fantasy writer or just be a contemporary writer. I have ideas that run the gamut. I have ideas for thrillers. I have ideas for sci-fis. I have ideas for speculative fiction. You know, so many that I think that I could honestly, you know, live 100 years and I probably wouldn't get to write all of them.
How about nonfiction? Are you drawn to that at all?
To writing nonfiction?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I was a journalist for many years,
well,
and I edited
I
nonfiction.
Yeah,
and I edited nonfiction. So I do think that I would say nonfiction and maybe self-help would be the two genres that I would leave to people more experienced than I. Yeah, I do prefer to stay in a fictional world. I think it allows me a little bit more freedom.
Now, I'm reading a quote from your press kit that you say that that this is the book of your heart. Is that you want to expand?
Yeah.
I mean, we did talk about that a little bit, but you want to expand a little bit on that?
Yeah, I think any time you spend 15 years with characters, you know, you have to put a lot of yourself into the book. You know, this was a book that was conceived in the early 2000s. It was inspired by the motel where I grew up. You know, when I was still in college, my father became ill and my mom sold our motel, and I didn't really get a chance to go back and get closure on this place that was a formative part of my life. So I started writing about it. And that's really where all my rage began. And you know, it was a book of anger. I threw a lot of my anger and my frustration into this book, just in terms of the emotions that I felt. And, I wanted to write something that was unrelated to what everything else I was doing in publishing. You know, like I didn't want to show it to anyone. I didn't want to talk about it. I just wanted it to be a conversation with myself. And that's what it was for many, many years. And that was really wonderful because it was a very honest conversation. I was able to really dig deep. And that's why I say, you know, it's a book that's sort of torn from my heart.
I wonder if you had been writing it with the goal of publication from the beginning, if you would have been able to go as deep.
I don't know. I don't think so. I think there was a freedom in thinking I would never publish it, and that it was almost just like this weird, you know, sort of repository for my frustration and rage and pain. There was freedom in that because I could be honest, you know.
Wow. So did you have second thoughts about letting it out into the world?
Not really. I got to the point where, you know, I knew that I wanted it to be a story. I knew that I wanted especially, you know, young brown kids to be able to, you know, who are more at the edges, to be able to relate and potentially see themselves in a book that was very specific. You know, it's a very specific story, but what I found really fascinating is that a lot of readers, they don't necessarily see themselves in, you know, these exact characters. You know, they're not stuck in those situations, but in terms of their emotional struggles, you know, the emotional arcs they go through, they can really relate. And that is what I wanted to put into the world, is something that, you know, young brown men and women can read and say, oh, I'm not alone. You know, I've been witnessed. I've been seen. You know, somebody knows.
And that was part of your motivation for fantasy, too, was to
yes,
for people like you to be seen in that world.
That will always be my motivation. I mean, I will. My hope is I will always write about characters who look like me, always. That is my, you know, that is sort of why I write, is so whatever, you know, kid or adult feels like they haven't been represented yet, that they don't necessarily have a place in this world, you know, they'll pick up a book and they'll say, oh, that's me. You know, that's what I want, because I didn't get that as a young person. I didn't feel like I was in any books that I read, and I don't want that to happen to young people now. I don't think it should.
You know, who you remind me of, and this is, I hope you think, a very good or a complimentary comparison is Octavia Butler.
Oh, wow. That is a huge compliment. I could never, ever live up to that. She is, you know, a titan. So.
Yeah. But she had the same motivation, you know, to be represented in these books that she loved to read, in the type of books that she loved to read. So, you're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Sabaa Tahir, and the title of her new book is All My Rage. Sabaa, do you want to read a little bit from the book for us?
Sure. I have a few different passages that I can read.
Okay.
So the first one is Chapter 1, Misbah. June, then, Lahore, Pakistan. The clouds over Lahore were purple as a gossip's tongue the day my mother told me I would wed. After she delivered the news, I found my father on the veranda. He sipped a cup of tea and surveyed the storm looming over the kite-spattered skyline. Change her mind, I wanted to scream. Tell her I'm not ready. Instead, I stood at his side, a child again, waiting for him to take care of me. I did not have to speak. My father looked at me, and he knew. Come now, little butterfly. He turned his moth-brown eyes to mine and patted my shoulder. You are strong like me. You'll make the best of it, and at last, you'll be free of your mother. He smiled, only half-joking. The monsoon rain swept over Lahore a few minutes later, sending chickens and children squawking for cover, drenching the cement floor of our home. I bent my head to the ground in prayer, regardless. Let my future husband be gentle, I thought, remembering the bruises on my cousin Amna, who married a light-haired English businessman against her parents' wishes. Let him be a good man. I was 18, full of fear. I should have prayed instead for a man unbroken. So that is a little segment of Misbah. And then I have a little something from Sal, Chapter 2, February, now Juniper, California. It is 6:37 a.m., and my father doesn't want me to know how drunk he is. Sal, are you listening? He calls me Sal instead of Salahuddin, so I don't hear the slur in his words. Hangs on to our Civic steering wheel like it's going to steal his wallet and bolt. In the ink-black morning, all I see of Abu's eyes are his glasses. The taillights of traffic going into school reflect off the thick square lenses. He's had them so long that they're hipster now. A Mojave Desert howler shakes the car, one of those three-day winds that rampage through your skin and colonize your ventricles. I hunch deep in my fleece, breath clouding. I would be there, Abu says. Don't worry. Okay, Sal? My nickname on his lips is all wrong. It's like by saying it, he's trying to make me feel like he's a friend instead of a mess masquerading as my father. If Emma were here, she would clear her throat and enunciate. Salahuddin, the precise pronunciation, a gentle reminder that she named me for the famous Muslim general, and I'd better not forget it. You said you'd go to the last appointment, too, I tell Abu. Dr. Rothman called last night to remind me, Abu says. You don't have to come if you have the writing club or soccer. Soccer season's over, and I quit the newspaper last semester. I'll be at the appointment. Emma's not taking care of herself, and someone needs to tell Dr. Rothman, preferably in a coherent sentence. I watched the words hit him, sharp little stones. Abu guides the car to the curb in front of Juniper High. A bleach blonde head buried in a parka materializes from the shadows of Sea Hall. Ashley. She saunters past the flagpole through the crowds of students and toward the Civic. The pale stretch of her legs is courageous for the 20-degree weather, also distracting. Ashley is close enough to the car that I can see her purple nail polish. Abu hasn't spotted her. He and Emma never said I can't have a girlfriend, but in the same way that giraffes are born knowing how to run, I was born with the innate understanding that having a girlfriend while living with my parents was forbidden. Abu digs his fingers into his eyes. His glasses have carved a shiny red dent on his nose. He slept in them last night on the recliner. Emma was too tired to notice, or she didn't want to notice. That's the beginning of Sal's story. And if we have time, I have one more section for Noor.
I'd love to hear from Noor, yes.
Okay, all right. So this is a little bit into Noor's first chapter. Jamie corners me in PE. She waits for Grace and Sophie, her eerily identical posse, to leave a little dirt patch outside the locker room before approaching. Hey, Noor. My name rhymes with Lure, not too difficult. I don't even expect people to roll the R at the end, like Auntie Mitzvah does. But Jamie's always pronounced it nor, like bore. I've known her since I moved to Juniper in first grade, and all that time, she's refused to say my name right, even though I've asked. For the first 5 or 6 years of my life here, Jamie mostly ignored my existence. Then in seventh grade, I got student of the month. I won a speech contest. I took advanced classes. She didn't befriend me, never that, but she did start keeping an eye on me. You look tired. Her eyes linger on my face. The calc problem set last night was brutal, huh? Jamie is innocent enough on the surface. Class president, straight A's, big smile, a pleasantness that got her on the homecoming court, even if it didn't get her the crown. And yet. Have you heard from any colleges? She doesn't want to ask, but her competitive streak gnaws at her. I know it's only February, but you did early action, right? My sister says I should have heard from Princeton by now. I don't remember telling Jamie that I did early action. I haven't told anyone at school about applying to college. There's no one to tell. Until 6 months ago, Salahuddin was the only friend I ever needed. There's an awkward pause. After Jamie realizes I'm not going to say anything, she steps back. Her face goes hard. Like that time I scored in the top 10 at the Golden State Engineering and Science Fair and she didn't place. Fine. Yeah, fine. I get it. Okay, sure. She sounds a little like a seal barking. Once the image is in my head, I can't get it out, which means I smile, which makes her madder because she thinks I'm laughing at her. The crowd of seniors pass, Grace and Sophie among them. They look at us curiously. They know we're not friends. Jane jogs to them, her 1,000-kilowatt smile pasted on. She'd make a great politician or serial killer. As she disappears to the field, Salahuddin comes out of the locker room, still pulling on his shirt. I catch a flash of rigid brown stomach muscle. What did that psychic want? The casual way he talks, like we haven't been avoiding each other for the last 6 months, 2 weeks, and 5 days. My brain refuses to formulate a response. After the fight, I lie awake thinking of all the things I should have shot back at him when he told me he could never fall in love with me, when he said I'd ruined our friendship. Now, I can't remember a single one. I should ignore him, but the way he looks at me, careful and hopeful, it's a punch, and I fold. So that is Noor. We get a little bit of her.
Thank you, Sabah. And that was Sabah Tahir reading from All My Rage. Now, you've been published in how many languages?
35.
Wow. And how many of those can you read?
I can read one of them.
That's about average.
Yep.
So have your books been published in Pakistani?
And then Urdu is the primary language in Pakistan.
Okay.
They have not been published in Urdu or Punjabi, which is the regional language where I am from. I am a Punjabi person. I have not. I do not believe they've been translated in Urdu or Punjabi yet.
Ah. And this book is being made for a TV series, I understand.
Yes, it's been optioned by Picture Start, and I and my co-writer are writing the script.
Is this your first time script writing?
No, it is actually not my first time script writing, but it is my first time adapting, something, that is this contemporary, like I've worked on, different stuff before, but this was... I've never worked on a story quite like this.
So what is that process like, converting this into script?
It's really tricky. So my co-writer's name is Amer Saleem. He also happens to be my older brother, and we have been screenwriting together for many years, actually. He is a really, really talented writer, and so a lot of times it's just about us going back and forth and sharing ideas of what we think the most powerful scenes are, the ones that illustrate who these characters are and what they want and, why they want it and what's standing in their way and how to get that on the page. So it is a lot of back and forth.
So do you like each work on, or are you both working on the same scene at the same time, or are you writing one scene, he's writing another, and then you switch them or how does that work?
No, we both work on the same stuff. So usually one of us will do a pass you know, we'll kind of divide them up. Hey, I'll take this scene, you take this scene. And then we, you know, we go and edit the other person. So I'll edit what he's written, he'll edit what I've written. That's usually what we do.
And have any of your other books been made into movies or TV shows?
No. Mm-mm. Nope. The Ember series, which is my other series, has not.
That would probably be more challenging in a way because of the cost of doing a fantasy series, TV series
that
is much
exactly
higher.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Much more difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, you know, also can be big blockbusters when they're done well, obviously Game of Thrones and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But we don't, when you were writing this book, you said it took you 15 years. How did you know when it was done?
I couldn't stand to look at it anymore. You know, I was just like, if I have to do one more edit of this thing, I'm going to light it on fire. And so that's when I was like, I think I'm done. Time to send it off.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way. Do you think you mentioned that you're going back to fantasy, and when will your next book be out?
Oh, I have no idea. I do not know. I have not finished writing it yet. So
okay.
I am not one of the writers who can write a book a year. That is just not a skill that I have. So
well,
it will be out when it's out. I don't know.
Considering how many books you've published so far, I don't think you've got too much. There aren't too many people who can keep up the pace you do. So I think
thank you.
So I think you're doing pretty good. And you know, I really enjoyed All My Rage. It's a great it was a book that I had to read the whole thing. I had to see what happened to these characters.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being with us today. And
Thank you for having me. It was a joy.
And I'm just going to close with a quote on immigration. We always close with the quote, and this is from Oscar Hanlon, who said, "Once I thought to write a history of the immigrants in America, then I discovered that the immigrants were American history."
Mm.
So, all right. See you next week on Writers' Voices. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Monica.